This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Cincinnati has a tradition of producing winners in the boxing ring. Tim Austin, Freddie Miller, Aaron Pryor, Ezra Charles, who defeated Joe Louis in 1950 to become the heavyweight champion of the world. University of Cincinnati Archives and Rare Books Library Head Archivist Kevin Grace, who explored the city's boxing tradition in his book, Cincinnati Boxing, joins us this afternoon. And you can join him by calling 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kevin, thank you again for being here this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for asking me.
And what would you say is the starting point for boxing in Cincinnati?
Okay, the starting point really goes back to the 1850s, where they had these riverboat men fighting for championships. But if you want a true beginning, I think it'd have to go back to 1885, when Cincinnati hosted the first heavyweight bout that used gloves.
Okay.
And it was John L. Sullivan and Dominic McCaffrey. John L. Sullivan was the Boston bad boy, and Dominic McCaffrey was out of Pittsburgh. But we had these two Irishmen coming to Cincinnati, and they fought a bout out at Chester Park.
So prior to that, we had these bare knuckles going on.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, 1885. That was the first ever nationally or with gloves.
International with gloves. Yeah, boxing prize fighting was really an English and an American tradition. It's since spread around the world in the last 150 years or so. But out of that tradition, this was the first one.
What were some of the original boxing venues in Cincinnati?
Wherever the sheriff couldn't get them.
Seriously.
Yeah, boxing's always been that marginal sport, and legal sometimes and illegal at other times. So there were occasions when they were trying to stage a boxing match in Cincinnati and heard the sheriff was after them. So they would go across the river into Kentucky or go up to a spot by Middletown. But in terms of real venues where nobody was going to arrest them needlessly, Cincinnati Gardens was a great place for boxing. So was Music Hall. Music Hall had a lot of boxing matches. As a matter of fact, I think until Cincinnati Gardens was constructed, Music Hall was the primary venue for competitive boxing in Cincinnati.
Now, in the earliest days, did Cincinnati get a lot of national attention for its boxing?
I think it did when we started having champions like Freddie Miller in the 1930s. Then we started getting attention. And, of course, we've always had a huge amateur boxing scene in Cincinnati. And that has maintained a national tradition that we have.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And as well as attracting national attention, did you have a lot of boxers who were national level coming into Cincinnati to fight as well?
Mainly because of the gardens. That really didn't happen. They would come sporadically up until that time, but by the 1950s, we were attracting big names here. So Cincinnati was on the map, convenient to get to, great boxing crowds. I would probably put Cincinnati's boxing fans up against those of any other city in the nation.
Let's talk with Billy from Anderson. Good afternoon, Billy. How are you? Billy, you'll need to turn your radio down so the you don't get confused there. Okay, let's try Billy back in later on here. Kevin.
I'm great.
Oh, there he is. Did you turn your radio down, Billy?
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Did you turn your radio down?
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's good. Now you'll hear us, and it's in real time. So what's your question or your comment?
Oh, you know, we got a new guy here in Cincinnati. Well, relatively new. He's been doing pretty good. By the last name of Broner.
Yeah,
and I was just wondering what's your guest thought about the state of modern boxing and Cincinnati and the traits of Broner.
Okay, Billy, thanks for the question. We appreciate it.
The state of boxing needs somebody like Broner. He's an incredible boxer, incredibly talented, fun to watch. He's a showboat sort of in the vein of Muhammad Ali in his heyday, where he infuriates you if you don't happen to like him. But it's the kind of personality boxing needs to bring back fans. Boxing goes in peaks and valleys all the time. And so when you have a colorful character like Broner, who has the boxing talent to match whatever he says, then it's a big plus. So I think Broner's just a wonderful fighter.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And Kevin, you know, we've mentioned Broner. He's one of the modern icons of Cincinnati boxing. Who were some of the legendary boxers? Ezra Charles, of course, from the early days. Who else?
Well, I'd start off with Freddie Miller, who grew up in Over the Rhine in a German family. His father was a baker, but he started fighting professionally when he was 16 years old. Across the river in some boxing gyms, but certainly here too. And he went on to win a championship, but he fought over 200 times, and he was a huge favorite in Belgium, in South Africa. He traveled the world, I think, more than any other Cincinnati boxer has ever done. So we begin with Freddie Miller, but by the time Ezra Charles comes along in the 40s and 50s, he's the champ. For me, I mean, he's the largest figure in Cincinnati boxing.
Ezra Charles also has a pretty significant legacy, doesn't he? I mean, he won the heavyweight championship in 1950.
Right? Yeah, the thing is with Charles is he beat Joe Louis, but a lot of people didn't want to accept that decision because there were a couple of governing bodies who didn't recognize it. So he not only had to beat Joe Louis and face, you know, the aftermath of fighting an icon, but he went on to beat Jersey Joe Walcott, and by that time, he was an undisputed champ in everyone's eyes. And then, of course, two of his greatest fights ever were against Rocky Marciano.
Kevin, when you were researching your book, was there something that really surprised you or something that you hadn't heard of before?
Quite a bit, and I relied on my son Josh, who co-authored it with me, because Josh has a great memory and can correct me on all manner of things.
As all good sons can.
Oh, yeah, sure, but he backs it up. I think what fascinated me the most was learning about the environment in which these boxers lived. They were very colorful characters. In Cincinnati, for instance, there was this family called the Bazinas. And five brothers and one sister, and they all boxed professionally in the late 1800s, early 1900s, a lot of it with bare-knuckle boxing. But Louis Bazina had an untimely end, which was done in a disreputable place in Cincinnati. But when you hear stories like the Bazinas, it adds, I guess, flesh and blood to the stories. They're not just accounts of boxers in the ring, but they're accounts of boxers as human beings. And that's what I really enjoyed learning about.
Do you think that's one of the things that makes boxing an interesting sport, that there is that one-on-one competition versus, say, team sports?
Yeah, it really is. You can train all you want, but once you get into the ring, you're there all by yourself. You may have a trainer or a manager or a cornerman yelling at you while the bout is going on, but it's you against one other person. And in a way, it's hard to defend the sport of boxing against some people, but I look at it in the way of understanding how gender, race, politics, economics, all of that comes together in the way boxing has developed in this country. And, of course, outside of baseball, boxing produces the most gorgeous literature you'd ever want to read.
What were the boxing crowds like back in the early days? Were they more working class, was it more the city's wealthy who were attending these events?
Well, that's the thing about boxing. It was everybody. When competitive boxing, when prize fighting started in Regency England, it was the hoi polloi and the upper class coming together, and that's been the way it's continued. You could have working class people coming together with the elite, but they're all there to see that. And, of course, gambling is the occupation that funnels a lot of this, and everybody gambles.
Were women allowed into the matches back then, or were these strictly for men only?
In the early days, if you were a woman attending the match, you were a woman of dubious virtue. But by the time we get to the 1920s, it was very acceptable for women to be there. And if you noticed, if you watch a boxing match today out of Vegas or Atlantic City or wherever the case may be, and you look at the people who are attending, it's a wonderful mixture, male and female, rich and poor. They all want to see a big fight.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we were talking about the one person, Broner,
Broner, it was Adrian, really, Broner.
Yes. Adrian Broner. Who are some of the other modern-day notables that we should be keeping an eye on?
Well, I think if you're talking about current ones?
Yes.
That's really hard to say because outside of Adrian Broner, we've had a lot of boxers go up and down and not achieve what they should or get into trouble with the law. So I think Adrian Broner is the only one that really stands out now. There are some in the amateur ranks that may come along. We'll see after the next Summer Olympics, perhaps. But I really don't think there's anyone that approaches the abilities of Adrian Broner right now, especially ones who have stayed out of trouble.
So if you go back to the early days, Cincinnati had a reputation for producing talent in the ring, correct?
Very much so, yeah.
And does it still have that same reputation today?
It does. We prepare a lot of boxers for the amateur ranks, either in Golden Gloves or the Olympics. It's been done for so long by such notables as Raleigh Schwartz, who was an Olympic boxing coach. It's been done because of Buddy LaRosa, who's been a tremendous benefactor to the heritage of Cincinnati boxing.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. And Kevin, did boxing help to shape Cincinnati as it is today, or is this just a sidelight in the city's history?
No, I don't think it's a sidelight. I think it has shaped it because it reflects our neighborhoods, our neighborhood development. It reflects our ethnic groups, whether you're Italian or Irish, or it affects our races, whether you're African American or not. So it affects, you know, neighborhood development. There used to be an outdoor ring in near the Finley Market area. There's music halls. So wherever you look in Cincinnati, there's some aspect of boxing that had a part in that.
And what kind of programs are still going on today that are boxing related in the city?
Well, the thing is, we've had a resurgence in boxing mainly because of the casinos, because now it's a new venue. And in Cincinnati, that's new for us. It's certainly not new in cities like Vegas or Atlantic City. But when you get casinos that are looking for entertainment, it's a natural. And a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact, the Horseshoe Casino had quite a large card of local boxers. Aaron Pryor's son was on the card for that night as well. So we keep building new venues. And, you know, as I said, boxing has its peaks and valleys. Right now, I think we're closely approaching that peak.
And I think in that venue you were talking about, the matches they had at the Horseshoe, they actually had six boxers who were locally.
Yes,
local
they
boxers.
Did. Yes, they did. And it was a good ticket to have. You know, the Coliseum or the arena has had boxing matches down there. We haven't had any in the gardens for a few years now. It'd be nice to get back to that because, oh, God forbid that the gardens would ever be torn down. But it's just a wonderful, wonderful venue for things like that. And it's perfect for boxing, too.
Did you ever see a point where that realistically might happen?
The gardens being torn down?
Yeah. Not the gardens being torn, but becoming a venue again for something like boxing.
I think if they want to save the gardens, it'd be a good idea to bring in a boxing card.
Let's talk with Day. Good afternoon, Day. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm very interested in this because my father, in 1928, was the heavyweight champion of Cincinnati. And he was, he was 20 years old.
Wow.
And for years we had his gold boxing go, but it went by the wayside. I still have his one mitt that he used just on the small box, you know, the bags that hang down, the small ones. I still have one of those.
Well, it's a treasure to hold on to then.
Oh, it is. I just, you know, it's wonderful. At one time he was also in 1927, he was the fullback of St. Mary's High School. He was the champion fullback of St. Mary's High School.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much for your comments. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. And Bob from Lawrenceburg wanted to ask a question about Buddy LaRosa and his role historically and today.
Well, you know, Buddy is one of the great storytellers in Cincinnati, so you need to get him started on his own career. And Buddy admits that when he was a skinny little kid, his father, by the way, Tony was a wonderful boxer in Cincinnati who fought professionally in local venues. But Buddy was a skinny little kid who boxed a few times and by his own admission didn't do too well. But what happened was that he kept his interest in boxing, and by the 1950s, 1960s, he was really promoting golden gloves and amateur boxing. And I think at that time, Buddy LaRosa is the one who should be credited with saving boxing in Cincinnati. We were on a downslide then, but he went on to manage professional boxers. He provided them with gym time. He provided them with guidance. Aaron Pryor was one of his big projects for several years. And Buddy kept his hand in the game and really has contributed to the heritage of boxing in Cincinnati. You probably couldn't tell Cincinnati's boxing story without Buddy LaRosa appearing frequently in the tale.
How many boxing champions has Cincinnati produced?
Oh, gosh. I wish you'd ask me that before I came on the radio so I'd give you an accurate
So you could
count.
Look it up.
Yeah, I could look it up. Off the top of my head, I'm going to say 10 that held world championships. But, you know, the thing is with boxing, you have these alphabet organizations that that promote their own fighters. And so you can be a heavyweight boxing champion of the world and may only have permission from one boxing authority to call yourself that. And there are others like Vladimir Klitschko now who might have five of those organizations behind him. But off the top of my head, I'd say for Cincinnati, we had 10. And if you ask me to name them, I could probably get close to 10.
So we still have golden gloves going on. We still have police athletic leagues going on that are developing young boxers.
Yeah, and some high schools are bringing it back too.
That's interesting.
And I think Xavier University had a boxing club. It wasn't an intercollegiate sport, but it was a club sport. But we are getting that a little bit now. And, you know, there's always controversy with something like that of whether a sport like boxing should be promoted in the schools. But for decades and decades, it was standard fare in, say, Catholic high schools in this country as part of the physical fitness programs.
Now, they're turning an unused pool in Over the Rhine into a new boxing ring is something that I've heard. And do you know how many kids are involved in boxing in Cincinnati today?
No, I don't. That'd be a good question because we have four or five gyms that are handling kids in Mount Auburn, in Millvale, and the kids come and go. But, you know, best guess would be 200 to 300 kids.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number is 513-419-7100. You can also email questions and comments to talk@wvxu.org. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Did UC have a boxing team for several years?
They did. Early in the 20th century, they did. And at that time, a lot of colleges did. And it was a viable intercollegiate sport. There are still some colleges that run boxing programs. But it wasn't one that really stuck around in Cincinnati as a collegiate sport, mainly because the students had the option of fighting golden gloves and maybe getting more exposure than they would in a collegiate setting or turning pro.
Now, I seem to remember, but when I was young, my grandfather used to be a big boxing fan. He always had something on TV. I think it was a local production, as a matter of fact, as I can remember. What were the broadcasts like back in the heyday?
Well, the early days of TV were perfect for boxing because you have a relatively small area, the boxing ring, and you could do it with one camera. So Gillette sponsored boxing matches. Every city seemed to have boxing matches. And, of course, those morphed into professional wrestling in various cities too. But you had national programs. You had the Friday night fights. ESPN has tried to revive that notion too. But the reason boxing became so popular on TV in the 1950s, 1960s, is because you could do it relatively economically with one camera in the ring, and bars and taverns would be a gathering place to watch these games on black and white TV.
Do you think that what the casino did is going to become something we see more of in Cincinnati? We have more matches coming in?
It should, yeah, yeah. Because it's a great venue. You not only get the gambling entertainment, which people love, but you get the food. It's a natural spot to go for that. And, you know, people can go to a boxing match and then go out to the slots again or the roulette wheel and have a great bite to eat and then go home.
Kevin, what's your opinion on MMA and its effects on traditional boxing?
It's two different sports. I think it's like comparing racquetball and tennis. Pick one of them. And MMA, you know, I'm not a big fan, but I say that admitting that I don't know a whole lot about it other than what I've seen a few times on TV. But I think it's incorrect to even put it in the same category as boxing because it is two different sports, different rules. The only thing they have in common is that you have guys beating on each other.
Now, what's your opinion about the future of boxing in Cincinnati? I think you said we're heading toward a peak, in your opinion?
I think so. And I think it's being led by somebody like Adrian Broner, who's a flamboyant personality, irritating as all get out sometimes with his bragging and boasting after every match. But when he gets in the ring, he's so exciting to watch. I think he's going to stir a lot more interest in local boxers to achieve.
Let's take one last call here. Kyle from Columbia Tusculum. Kyle, we've got about 30 seconds here to get your question in. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Hi, I just wanted to see if, in terms of heavyweight boxers from Cincinnati, the one that I'm most familiar with is Dale Crow. Are you familiar with him, and is he kind of the biggest, the most prominent name in terms of heavyweight boxers in Cincinnati, or who are some of the other ones?
Okay, well, Kyle, thanks very much for the question.
Dale Crow's a sad case because I believe he's in prison now for arranging a murder of someone he didn't like. But in terms of his rank with the other heavyweight boxers we've had in Cincinnati, doesn't come close. Doesn't come close.
Kevin, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
University of Cincinnati Archives and Rare Books Library Head Archivist Kevin Grace. He's also the author of the book, Cincinnati Boxing,